Welcome to the Coin Podcast Network.
You want to be able to do it all.
It's a lot of great energy.
Upbeat and going forward and excited.
Fun and juice, man. And we're going to get down to business.
From our studios in the Coin Tower in downtown Portland, Oregon, this is coverage of the National Football League you won't find anywhere else. This is Out of the Tunnel with AJ and Marcus on the Coin Podcast Network.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Out of the Tunnel with your host Marcus Greaves and the infamous Miss AJ McCord. AJ, another week in the NFL is wrapped up. I know I say this every single week, but it was another good week of football. How are you feeling about it?
It was. It's pretty funny, though. It's not over, right? We're recording this on Tuesday, December 1st, so we still got a Ravens-Steelers game that was supposed to be played on Thanksgiving. It's now going to be played nearly a week later, but still, it is week 12 or 13, right? Whatever we're in.
We're losing track of it. And I was going to say, isn't that crazy, which will lead us – we'll start off with talking about kind of COVID around the league in regards to that. And AJ, that you're right. That Ravens-Steelers game was supposed to be played last week, and it's now maybe not going to be played till was Wednesday the 2nd or next week?
No, this Wednesday.
And that's the thing, too, is I thought it was supposed to be, you know, Wednesday the 2nd, which it probably will be, but it's just like the more and more things come out, it seems like they keep pushing it and pushing it, because what was it? It was originally supposed to be on Sunday. Then they push it to Monday.
No, originally supposed to be on Thursday. It was the nightcap on Thanksgiving.
Oh, yeah. But I'm saying once
it was the best game.
Then they just kept moving it and moving it. So, we'll talk about it more later on in the headlines with kind of how COVID is. It seems like it's starting to spike a little bit in the league some more. I mean, do you think it's just because it was around the holidays, or what do you think kind of plays into that right now with the spikes in, at least in the NFL?
I mean, I think it reflects the country, right? Mm-hmm. Like the NFL has said, they're not going to do a bubble. And so without a bubble, you're still around. The players are doing the best they can, but to some extent, people are still living their lives. And in certain places, COVID is more rampant than others. And so as much as you want, you know, you can do everything right now and still catch COVID, because the numbers in the country are so high. And I think obviously the benefit that the NFL has that the rest of the country doesn't is they find out as soon as they're positive that they're positive. And so you're going to have this like sort of mirror image in the NFL of what it looks like in the country. And I don't really know that the holidays had much to do with it, at least for them, because this all happened, you know, before Thanksgiving. Yeah. So, but the NFL is just trying and trying and doing the best they can. But now the fallout from this game moved all the way to Wednesday, which is going to be so fun. It's going to be like an NCAA tournament, you know, because we're going to watch football at like 12:30 in the morning or in the afternoon here on the West Coast. But then now you look at the next week and there are games being played Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. Because of the Steelers and the Ravens' next opponents. So, it's just crazy. It's like week in, week out, and you look around, and some of the best teams are the ones who have sort of been lucky to an extent that neither them nor their opponent, because remember, the Steelers didn't do anything wrong in this scenario, but they're getting hosed yet again.
Yeah.
Like the second or third game for them. Not that they're having any trouble, they're still undefeated. But anyway, so COVID certainly still the biggest X factor this season.
And it's pretty interesting, too, when you said that, because you're right. I mean, you see a team like maybe the Steelers I feel like them and the Seahawks, especially with Pete Carroll saying, you know, they haven't had any positive tests, which is that's huge. That's really huge. Mm-hmm. And just seeing how they've taken care of that business is, you know, that's what you want each team to do. But again, like you said, you could do almost everything right and then still, you know, find or have positive cases. So there's not a lot we can do other than continue to stay safe. Obviously, social distance, be responsible, wear your mask and things like that. But AJ, something we haven't talked about in these past couple of weeks on the show, but we always try and highlight it every time there is something positive in regards to that. And that's, you know, how the NFL or players are tackling racial injustice, not just, you know, in the league, but obviously around the nation and the country and things like that. So we're going to do something a little different right now. And AJ, so I'll start off with you. What do you have for us in regards to racial injustice?
So today we are recording this podcast on Tuesday, December 1st. It is Giving Tuesday, which is always, you know, we have like this week of named days. It feels like right after Thanksgiving, you've got Black Friday, you've got Small Business Saturday, you've got Cyber Monday.
Yeah.
Today is Giving Tuesday. So around the league, a lot of players highlighting their charities and the work that they're doing in their communities. So one of the ones that is obviously near and dear to us here in Portland is Brennan Scarlett's Big Yard Foundation. He works really hard. He grew up in Portland, Texans linebacker, for those of you who don't know who he is. But he works really hard to make sure that kids who may not have access to reading material have access. So that's what he does. He's really, really focused on education. So his Big Yard Foundation is doing some cool stuff for Giving Tuesday. So we've got that linked on our social medias, on my Twitter and my Instagram. So Brennan Scarlett's Big Yard Foundation, one that we've been sort of partners with here in Portland for a while and doing some really, really great things in the community.
Hey, it is time for our top headlines. We already touched on it a little bit, but let's go in more depth because sounds like we have some positive news. So the Ravens and Steelers game has been postponed 3 times. But as of a few minutes ago, AJ, it sounds like the game is on, and that's it's a for sure thing. Am I right? Let me know, AJ.
It's as for sure as it can be until it actually kicks off on Wednesday afternoon. According to Adam Schefter, the Ravens team flight is leaving. The game is on. The Ravens, though, did get 2 more positive tests today per his sources. It's thought to be one player, one staff. And in the words of one source, and I quote, it's not unexpected and it's not a concern for the game.
Okay. So that's a little, that's a positive.
Yes. So theoretically, we will get some football randomly on a Wednesday afternoon.
Right. Wednesday afternoon, we're randomly going to get a really good game, hopefully. I mean, I know it's going to be interesting to see, too, because I know Lamar Jackson was one of the people that they were kind of highlighting, as well as Mark Ingram. That's going to be interesting to see how they bounce back and how they recover because, again, everyone experiences different symptoms and everyone experiences it to a different level. So it'll be interesting to see how they respond. Obviously, the NFL will do everything in their power to make sure these guys are safe and make sure that it's a safe game to play. So with that being said, sounds like we'll have some random Wednesday afternoon football here on the West Coast, which will be nice. And AJ, since we're on the COVID topic, let's talk about it, the Broncos. Because the Broncos experienced something that I don't think I've ever seen before in my 25 years of life. I've never seen a team have no quarterbacks. 3 quarterbacks on the Broncos were on the COVID list. So they didn't have a quarterback in their game. And AJ, I want to get your thoughts on this because when we talked about it on Game On just this last Sunday, you had a really good piece, and I thought it was super funny. Just like, you're just like, you heard that right. There is no mistake in my voice when I say it. The Broncos did not have a quarterback. I mean, we saw Royce Freeman. We saw Philip Lindsay. We saw everybody kind of checking at quarterback. But just give me your thoughts on that, AJ. What was your reaction when you watched that game?
I mean, okay. So I'm coming at this as somebody who used to be a diehard San Diego Chargers fan. So I have no pity innately in my heart for the Denver Broncos. Like, okay. None.
Yeah.
That said, I felt bad for the Denver Broncos. I felt bad that they were in this position. I felt bad for Kendall Hinton. Like, you think, oh, cool, you get to, like, play quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah.
Oh, you went 1 for 9, 13 yards. 2 interceptions and you had to eat a sack. That's unfortunate. So that I just, and you had to play the Saints. You couldn't get like the Jets. Yeah. You had to get the Saints. And so I just felt bad. 31-3, the final score there. But it was what it was. And it was really unfortunate because it sounds like, unlike with the Ravens and the Steelers, it wasn't a matter of like this outbreak or massive test, but it was that these guys had a meeting and didn't stay socially distant, didn't wear their masks as long as they were supposed to. Mm-hmm. And that's what cost them. And so that just is, I feel bad.
Right.
Good for Kendall for getting out there. You know, the Broncos are probably not going to make the playoffs anyway. So
yeah,
that is what it is. But I felt bad.
Yeah, I think it was just interesting too, because this is kind of like, this is the norm now. Like, obviously, three quarterbacks not playing in a game is going to, that's not normal. But just in regards to like, 1 second you could be so prepared, say, okay, this is our game plan going into this game or this week. This is what we got for the week. Let's prep it, get ready to play this next game. And then like in a snap of a finger, you're like, okay, well now I don't have a quarterback on the roster. So it's just like, it's the new norm, you know, players just not being able to play, obviously, because they test positive for COVID, or, you know, they're in close contact or whatever it is. So you have to stay safe and things like that. But just to see how quick it is where it's like, all right, you got three quarterbacks and now you don't. I think that's crazy. But it's just kind of something that we have to get used to. Something I'm not used to, though, AJ, and this is going to be an interesting topic. I already know how you feel about one of these players, but I want to get your thoughts on this. So Tom Brady, obviously one of the best to ever play. Cam Newton, same thing. I think he was a super great quarterback. I think he kind of elevated, changed the game in a way of what he did for running quarterbacks, not just in college, but in the NFL. And as of lately, obviously Cam is on the Patriots now. They are not doing very well. The Bucs, where Tom Brady is, they're okay. They have a really talented roster, but they're still not as impressive as they should be. People have been saying that both these guys are kind of washed. I want to get your thoughts on that. Do you think these guys are washed? Like, I mean, obviously there's something to be said in regard. You look at the Patriots, they've had a ton of guys out. You kind of figured they weren't going to be very great. I mean, you don't really give Cam a lot of weapons. On top of that, Cam is getting older, so he can't really backpack the load like he used to. Same thing. You look at Tom Brady. Tom Brady's still a great quarterback, smart guy. You know, if it came down to it, I'm going to say he can maybe win one more Super Bowl, which would be unreal. But talent-wise, he's still pretty much there. He has a bunch of talent around him. But it just seems like something is a little off about these two players now, and they don't really have that spark like they used to. I mean, do you think these guys are washed, AJ?
Washed is a fair term because they're both in new systems.
Right.
So it's like totally valid that they have this transitional year. And you look at what they did this last week. I mean, Cam Newton and the Patriots beat the Cardinals.
Right.
That's a team that was on top of the NFC West, the toughest division in football, like 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I wouldn't call them washed. I think I would just view this year as like a transition year.
Mm-hmm.
And if they can't get the system down for next year, then you can start having those conversations about their skill level. But right now, I don't really think it's fair to judge them by the standards that even their own standards that they've set for themselves during their time in the league, because both of them are in brand new systems, brand new head coaches, brand new teammates. You mentioned the lack of weapons that Cam has. I mean, Tom Brady has just a few weapons, and he definitely has weapons in Tampa, but again, he's never played outside of the Patriot system.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it's fair to call them washed, but I think these guys are experiencing some bumps as they get used to new teams, new systems.
Yeah. And I think the thing that we have to put in perspective too, is we put these kind of like standards on guys when they play. So Tom Brady, it's kind of the same thing when you watch basketball with LeBron. Like if LeBron doesn't make the finals, people look at LeBron and they're like, you know, LeBron, you failed. You know what I'm saying? Because it's like he has to make the finals every single year and be the best player on the planet every single year. Or people are going to look at him and say he's not as good. And in a way, obviously with a grain of salt, I think it's the same. It's the same token when you look at someone like Tom Brady, where Tom Brady's been so dominant for so long with Bill Belichick and the Patriots that, you know, if he has a down year or the Patriots don't, or excuse me, if he doesn't win a Super Bowl, people are going to look at him and be like, what the heck? Tom Brady's over with. He's washed. Same thing with Cam Newton. We're used to watching Cam run all over defenses, right? You know, he has the arm, he's accurate, but his play is just gone down. I mean, he missed a whole year of football. You know, like,
right.
It's not like you're just going to come out there and be the best player on the planet. That's just not how sports work. So,
and Cam has injured like critical aspects to his game,
right?
Like you mentioned him being a mobile quarterback. he's hurt his legs.
Yeah.
So when you hurt the thing, it's not, it would be like, it's like when Drew Brees or if Tom Brady were to have a dislocated shoulder in his throwing arm.
Yeah.
Like that's just different to come back from, because Cam's legs are as much of a weapon for him as his arm.
Mm-hmm. And so that's the thing we got to take in perspective. If you're saying that they're washed, I don't think they're washed. Again, new system, things like that. But AJ, something that has caught us all off guard, and it was super funny because right before we started recording, you were like, wait, huh? And that is the fact that the Browns are 8-3 right now. How weird is that? I mean, what was it? This was the, it was the best start where they've had the best record since they've had since 2007.
Yeah, their first, they just guaranteed themselves their first non-losing record since 2007. So for the first time in 12 years, the Cleveland Browns are going to have a winning record.
How insane is that?
And especially when you think about like the team, it's not like these guys are new. They're down.
Yeah.
But it's clicking this year.
It's finally clicking. They finally found a way to be a successful football team. But you know who else found a way to win a game? Even if they didn't play the prettiest game, they still found a way to win. And at the end of the day, a win is a win. That is the Seahawks. They took down the Eagles on Monday Night Football. We're going to break all that down. We're going to hear from some players, coaches. We're going to hear everything. But let's first take a break.
Coming soon on the Coin Podcast Network.
There's one story that haunts me.
Ken Martin was 54 years old. And then there was Barbara Martin, who was 48. The oldest was Barbie, followed by Virginia, and then Susan, who was 10.
A father, mother, and three daughters have vanished.
The primary theory at the time was that it was an accident.
Both girls had holes in their skulls.
When we find the car in the Columbia River, we will find the Martin family and we will solve this case.
Keep an ear out for that story coming soon and check out more great Coin Podcast Network presentations on coin.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
I'm happy. I'm getting a little respect, but you know, I still got work to do. One of the defensive coaches came up to me and it kind of made me mad that he was like, you know, I was in Detroit with Megatron, but you're not there yet. You know, in my mind, I'm not trying to be Megatron. I'm trying to be me. So, you know, had a little chip on my shoulder the whole game.
Whew.
What is he doing?
So the funnier part of that even is like, first off, trying to get in DK's head, telling him that he's not Calvin Johnson. And he's like, yeah, I know I'm DK Metcalf.
Mm-hmm.
And then secondarily was afterwards, that clip gets tweeted out. DK replies with the still from the Last Dance documentary with Michael Jordan, and it, where Michael Jordan like is looking at the iPad and he goes, I took that personally.
Right.
And it's like basically admitting that he sort of made up this beef to like give himself an edge, right? Because that's like that's sort of what Jordan admitted to doing in that documentary. It was like taking this tiny little thing that wasn't really meant to be a stab, but like turning it into a stab so that he could get some sort of chip on his shoulder. And what does DK do? He goes off, has a career high, 177 yards. Seahawks get the win. Russell Wilson was talking afterwards how, you know, DK was really close on a route that was going to be an 80-yard touchdown, and that would have been wild. But Marcus, as somebody who played, I'm just really curious to your take on this sort of like perceived slight that DK had in the game.
Yeah. I think the best part about this too is that if you're a competitor, right, there's certain things that like will get you going, right? And they'll take your level of play to the next level, right? So for a lot of guys, maybe it's, you know, you're motivated by the underdog mentality. Same thing. Maybe you're motivated by, maybe you don't even need to be motivated. Maybe you love like, you know, the fans being there or something like that. But there's something to be said, especially against an opponent, right? Where like an opponent coach or a player or somebody, right? If someone's like, hey, here's a good example, Marcus, I could beat you in a 40-yard dash. I'm going to take that personal, right? Even if like, if I know for a fact that like, okay, maybe he can beat me, but I'm going to make sure it's not even, you know, whatever it is. Basically, what I'm saying is guys come up with things in their head in order to get motivated, right? And I think with for DK Metcalf, I think he's always been a competitor, but you watch how he played that game. And I always said this with DK is that he impacts not just in, you know, physically catching the ball and running, but in blocking. He made a statement because what there was one thing that Calvin Johnson was always good at as well. He would manhandle corners, manhandle backs. He would block them into the sideline every single time. That stuff tells you what kind of a player Calvin Johnson was. And then you watch DK Metcalf against Darius Slay. I mean, it's the same thing. I feel bad for Darius Slay because he's a great player. But, like, if I'm Darius Slay, I'm going up to, to one of the defensive coaches, whoever said it to him, being like, listen, man, did you really have to say that? Because what you did was really just open the gate for DK to come out as like a crazy bull. And that's basically what he did. So to see what he did and to see how he responded to that, it just shows who he is. I mean, I would do the same thing if, you know, someone's talking smack to me. I'm going to find a way to be like, listen, man. All right, if that's how it's going to be, it's how it's going to be. But now I got something to play for. Every play is going to be in the back of my mind.
And it's pretty funny because before this season, DK's previous high in receiving yards was also against the Eagles. He had 160 against them in the playoffs last year. So that the question was more of like, is there something about the Eagles? And of course, DK was taken. He had, I think, 8 wide receivers taken before him in the draft. And so, again, you get your chips, you know, you got to motivate yourself however you got to motivate yourself. And for DK, you know, Russell was asked about that. And he was like, I mean, you got to try something.
Right.
You can't stop him. So you might as well try getting in his head. But DCs everywhere are taking notes and saying, okay, not that way. Mm-hmm. So next, we got to talk about, speaking of defensive coordinators, Ken Norton has been on the hot seat for the Seahawks, it seems, despite the fact that they are 8-3 this season. And really, 12, you don't have a leg to stand on after this last game because the defense was dominant for pretty much all of it. No one more so than Jamal Adams. So Marcus, I know you're going to talk about in our keys to the game in just a minute, but first and foremost, let's hear from Jamal on the swagger of this defensive unit.
The swagger's through the roof, man. You know, we're playing with a lot of swagger. We're playing with a lot of confidence. We know when we step on the field, we're gonna try to take the ball away. We're going to get a sack. We're going to get a pick. And then, you know, we're gonna invite everybody to the party, man. That's what we do. We just invite everybody to the party, man. So it's a great feeling. It's a great win. You know, obviously those guys did a lot of talking on that other side of the field. But at the end of the day, we're not in the choir, man. We just come out and produce and win ball games.
I like it.
Where Jamal gets some of his like sayings, but they're amazing.
Right.
We're not in the choir, man. I mean, like just so great. And last night he was not like, Jamal's always super charismatic in his post-game interviews, but he like came up with swagger and it wasn't like the swagger, like, oh, I'm happy to be here. It was the swagger of like, I told you so.
Right.
Come at me. Yeah, give me your questions. And this defense has been questioned and chastised, and rightfully so. I think they'll be the first ones to admit it. Bobby Wagner was telling us a few weeks ago, we got to learn how to play with pride because right now we're not playing with pride as a defense. So it's not like this defense doesn't deserve criticism, but I think right now we're also seeing them sort of like bask in the glow of their success in coming together and playing with pride and how good they can be. So Jamal Adams had a ridiculous game last night. We're going to talk about it a little bit more in your keys to the game, Marcus. So, without further ado,
Let's do it.
To break down the Seahawks versus the Eagles, let's start with Jamal Adams, my friend, because we were just talking about him. He was obviously a massive key for the Eagles. He was a massive key for the Seahawks last night against the Eagles. Tied his sack total from last season already this year with 6.5. What is it about this guy that makes him such a game changer for the Seahawks when he is on?
And so what we saw last night in the game against the Eagles, was just the Seahawks do something with Jamal Adams. And this is something that Jamal Adams has always been able to do, which is he's a great run stopper, right? People look at him and say, they've kind of criticized his coverage ability, but there's only been one time he's got burnt, right? And that was by Stephon Diggs that we all saw, and then everyone from there kind of took off with it. But you watch him just in run defense, and it seemed like every single time the Eagles tried to get anything going, right? So if they tried to have a mesh point between Carson Wentz and one of the running backs, who was there? Jamal Adams. If a lineman or a tight end tried to block Jamal Adams off the side, he somehow slipped in and got in the backfield. He didn't make every single tackle for the Seahawks on the defense, but what he did was he disrupts the play so much that they break down, right? Running backs, a good example is if I'm a running back and I get the ball, and by the time I first touch the ball and I look up trying to find my read, and there's already a safety in my face blocking the hole I'm supposed to go, or right standing in the hole I'm supposed to go, then I'm going to have to adjust. From there, I'm going to have to jump cut or change direction or whatever it is. And by that time, obviously, it does not matter how good your offensive line or anybody is. You can't block that long. So just by Jamal Adams getting in the backfield and disrupting that first mesh point and making it harder for the running back to get the ball and find his read, it makes everything so much harder for the offense, because then everybody's going to be out of sync. You're kind of just sporadic. Everyone's running all over the place just trying to pick up a yard or something like that. So, and we saw it time and time again where even if he didn't get a sack, AJ, like you were saying, he was there. Carson Wentz knew he was there, and he knew he had that internal clock. And by the time the ball touched his hand and he took, you know, two steps back in his drop step, I mean, man, this guy was nervous, and you could tell he was. You could tell he felt the presence of Jamal Adams. That's just what he does. He disrupts plays. He's a big physical safety that, listen, if you need him in coverage, he can cover. But more importantly, he is a great run stopper. And listen, I don't care who you are, what running back it is, it can be Derrick Henry, it can be anybody. You do not want to be tackled by Jamal Adams, because if you're tackled by Jamal Adams, not only will it hurt, if you give that guy more confidence in the game, it's going to be bad news. And we saw that. Well, you can tell when he's starting to feel good, because say he gets a tackle and he starts talking to himself. Once he starts talking to himself, it's kind of like Damian Lillard. Once those guys are talking to themselves, you know something's wrong, right? Because you know that they are feeling good and they're confident and they have that swagger and that chip on their shoulder and they're ready to make big plays, you know, play in and play out.
The worst thing for a opposing player to see someone else start talking to themselves. And I think too of even like talking to themselves, but then like talking to the other team. Yeah. Like I think of Baker Mayfield when they were playing the Jags on Sunday, the Jags like switched on the defensive line. And he was like, "Oh, that's cute, guys."
Yeah.
Did this. And then, or Cam Newton, when he's playing, I can't remember which game this was, but someone called out his play call.
Oh,
he was like, "Oh, you've been studying up. Watch this." And then goes off and scores. Is that like as soon as they're so locked into the game that they're either talking to themselves or hearing what the opponent is saying, repeating and mocking it back to them, you're toast.
Yeah, that's when you know you're in trouble. And just like you said, just seeing someone like a Cam Newton say, you know, and that game was against Green Bay because it was Clay Matthews that said it. He said,
"That's right."
He said, "Watch the wheel route. Watch the wheel route." And then kid, that was when Cam was like, "Oh, that you've been watching film. That's cute. Watch this." You know what I'm saying? And he's just like, same thing with Kyler Murray when he played against the Seahawks, when he saw DeAndre Hopkins in single man coverage. He's like, "Oh, that's easy." And he was smiling when he threw the ball because you already knew that kind of that level of confidence. Not everybody has, but those players that have it, once they get that to that level in a game, you know, it's basically game over because they're making every big play.
Exactly. Speaking of making every big play and getting back in the game, nice transition. Let's talk about Chris Carson.
Yes.
This guy was out and away from the game of football for more than a month as he dealt with a foot injury on Monday night against the Eagles. Oh, my goodness. His first touchdown run, it was like his next contract depended on him getting into the end zone.
Right.
What kind of extra dimension does having him in the backfield bring back for the Seahawks?
It brings a level of physicality offensively. And the thing is that this saying is – throughout the entire football, everything is that be the hammer, not the nail. The thing with Chris Carson, he has always been the hammer every single time. It's extremely hard to find a play where Chris Carson is the one who gets knocked off his feet and he takes the big hit. Guys aren't able to hit him like that because he's the one that's delivering the blows. But AJ, more importantly, you just see that defenses have to respect the run game then when he's back. And that's exactly what we saw. Guys had to creep up a little bit more. If you're a linebacker, because you're like, "Listen, man, if they're going to run the ball, I have to be ready to tackle Chris Carson, who's not a small guy, very physical runner, and can do everything. You know, he can catch out of the backfield. He can juke you out in the open field. He can break the tackles, or he can run through you, and he has the speed to hit the outside. So he could really do it all, but just seeing what he can do for the Seahawks offense is open everything up. We saw that the Eagles were like, now we have to respect the run game as well, which then opened up the pass game where a guy like DK Metcalf could have a big game.
So you touched on it there. Let's switch to Mr. DK Metcalf, because he had a career night, like we mentioned, against the Eagles. Marcus, explain to me, I mean, it's like pretty obvious the impact he has on the game, but explain to me why in this game in particular, he is your third key.
So in this one, what I saw from him was obviously, you know, the yards, 10 receptions, 177 yards. He didn't have a touchdown, but man, just watching what he can do, he changes the dynamic of an entire offense in the game. But more importantly, Darius Slay is a really, really good player, a very elite defensive back. There's something to be said where you can go up against a defensive back. On top of that, you know he's going to talk some smack. So you have those two guys going at it. Before the game, you have everything that we already talked about with the defensive coach saying, you know, you're not as good as Calvin Johnson. And then on top of that, actually being able to produce, that's huge. That just shows me, like I said, not only a competitor, but listen, you have to be special to back all those things up, right? There's a lot of things that are thrown your way if you're seen in the spotlight. And if you are in the spotlight, if you make a bad play, like we saw a couple weeks ago when he dropped the ball before he physically got into the end zone, right? That's a bad play. It was in the spotlight. But then what did he do? He made up for it when they played the Cardinals, when he ran, you know, 110 yards to go chase down Buda Baker. But now just seeing what he can do is so insane to me because, like I said, Darius Slay is a very elite defensive back. He was – some of those catches he made, if that's any other player in the league, and I'm being honest, and that's going with DeAndre Hopkins as well, who I think is probably the best receiver in the league. If it's any other player, I really don't think they can make those catches. Just his body size, his speed, his ability to adjust his body in the air. I mean, he caught one over Darius Slay. I was like, how did he even catch that? Like he was like falling backwards and like caught it basically on his shoulder. Like it was like the craziest thing with one arm. But that's just what he can do. The fact of he's such an impact player blocking, receiving, and overall just effort-wise for this Seahawks team makes all the difference. And he's that guy who's going to bring the chip on his shoulder because offensively, you look, there's not really a guy for the Seahawks that's kind of like your bruiser. You know what I'm saying? But he is a bruiser. And basically, long story short, he's just a guy that will be able to do everything for your offense, have the chip on your shoulder. And there's something to be said when you have a tough guy on your team. He is the tough guy for the Seahawks. And that's basically what he could do. He could bring any dimension to the Seahawks offense, whether he has the ball in his hand or not. So it's super impressive. He's always going to be a key when he has a big game.
And you want to talk about somebody who is always the hammer and not the nail. Mm-hmm. Like typically the receiver ends up being the nail every once in a while, not DK Metcalf. Defenders like think twice before going and tackling him, which is crazy. And then the chip, you know, I think of like somebody like Zach Collins for the Blazers or Nurk. Like as soon as there's any sort of scuffle on the field, DK Metcalf is right in it.
Right
in it, defending his dude. And we talked about this when he had that chase down of Buda Baker. That wasn't because DK wanted to get this crazy stat and tackle. That was because he didn't want his boy Russ to have a pick six on his stat sheet.
Mm-hmm.
So like he takes everything personally, whether you do it to him or you do it to his teammates. So as somebody who played team sports and individual sports all their lives, you cannot underestimate just how big of an impact that can have on a game and team.
Right. Just like his ability to change a mentality of an offense. Cause when he's out there, like he's kind of like Chris Carson's kind of the same way when he's out there and those guys are actually playing. I mean, AJ, look at it. Even from last season, the Seahawks offense, they weren't tough guys. You know what I'm saying? Like they were very good at what they did, but they weren't, there's just something different about them now, knowing that they have that bruiser that like, you know, you could throw a slant over the middle of the DK Metcalf and you see the safety kind of sometimes hesitate. Like, do I really want to come downhill and try and hit him? Because like you said, he's always been the hammer. And we see it where guys will come downhill and lower their whole shoulder and send their whole body at him. And somehow they're the ones ending up on the ground. DK Metcalf is still standing. Like, that's just something different that we haven't seen since like a Megatron. And especially for being as young as he is, this is something that the Seahawks are very lucky to have. But AJ, something positive to just wrap up this podcast. I always like these segments, AJ, because you know what? I'm not saying that we need more positivity, but we always need positivity. But I think sometimes in the headlines when we're talking, we're like, man, you know, we talk about COVID, we talk about racial injustice, things that, you know, sometimes they're not the best thing, to be honest, right? You know, sometimes listening to that, they can kind of take a toll, not just on listeners, but obviously you and I, you know, people who experience these things as well, whether that be, you know, someone we know having COVID or just COVID overall, seeing what it does to people. And then on top of that, same thing with the racial injustice, you know, we see what it does to people or we experience it or whatever it is. But these positive stories, AJ, they really just hit me right in the soft spot. And we need a good one today. What do we got for us today, AJ?
Okay, so we actually are doing a little bit of a two-parter today because obviously it was Thanksgiving since we've talked last. So first and foremost, we're going to highlight what some of the guys did. We talked a little bit about Aaron Rodgers and what he did last week. But on Thanksgiving, the OSL, which is formerly known as Operation Sack Lunch, Ugo Amadi, Seahawks defensive back, and of course, former Duck, handed out meals, like physically went and handed out meals. They handed out 450 Costco pumpkin pies and served 8,000 meals on Thanksgiving, which is really cool because it's one thing to donate your time, your money, because these guys, I think, have plenty of it, right? Like for the most part. Yeah. So while that doesn't negate anything that they do by donating money, donating time and putting your faith and your, putting your time out there so that you can spend time in the community and see the community, invest in the community in that personal way, I think is really, really critical. And so pretty cool to see Ugo Amadi on Thanksgiving spending his day like that. Really awesome.
And it's not even saying that these guys could be anywhere in the world, because obviously with COVID, there's a lot of restrictions. But again, this guy, he could have very easily just stayed inside and not done anything, you know, and he, again, and very easily could have just gave some money and been like, you know, I did my part, here you go. But going out and physically doing it, letting people see you and see how much you actually care, there's something to be said about that. There's a lot of respect to that guy.
And that's one of the things that we love about sports, right? Is like, they bring people together, they inspire people. And so seeing somebody versus seeing somebody give a check just hits a little bit differently. Not that the money, again, is not important, because we need these charities need that as well, but pretty cool to donate his time too. And speaking of donating time, so this is outside the NFL, but this is a charity that I really think is doing some amazing things in this world, and one that since you're listening to our podcast, you also have to hear about. So this is a charity called Rescue Freedom. I found them a few years ago when I moved to the Pacific Northwest through Freedom Hikers, which anybody who follows me knows I really love the outdoors. Marcus, you're going hiking with me in the spring. So this last year in 2019, I did 52 hikes in a year to try and raise money and raise awareness for Rescue Freedom, who is trying to end human trafficking around the world. And they do a really good job because, again, you want to talk about just like the impact that they have. They don't just donate money. They actually partner with local resources to help women and children and victims of human trafficking tangibly get out of the situation that they're in. So that means like a bus from a brothel to a safe house. That means uniforms for a kid to go to a school that they've never been able to go to. That means all these things. That means legal fees so that a survivor can put the person who's enabling these human trafficking rings behind bars. And so today, we're recording this on December 1st, Giving Tuesday, they are matching any donation up to $100,000, which is really, really awesome. So if you are looking for a charity to give to, obviously this will come out on Wednesday, but if you're looking for a charity to give to, Rescue Freedom is always a really good way. And most of the time when I go out hiking, I tag them, I wear their stuff. It's a really great Christmas gift, and it's just something that I think the entire world can get behind ending human trafficking. So that's one charity that's doing a lot of really good things in this world, and one that I love supporting. So there's our positive stories for you.
Love it. Go support all of that. AJ, thank you so much for telling us about that. That's definitely something we should all keep in mind. And again, we'll obviously tweet things like this out so you guys can find it once you're done listening to this podcast. But that is all we have for you guys on this episode of Out of the Tunnel with AJ McCord and Marcus Greaves. Again, you can always find us on social media. You can find AJ at AJ_McCord. Me at Marcus_Greaves. Hopefully you guys stay safe and stay healthy. Continue to social distance and wear your mask. All right, you guys. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you guys next week.
Whoop, whoop.
Thank you for listening to the Coin Podcast Network. You can listen to more great Coin podcasts on coin.com/podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Please listen, download, subscribe, and review.